I needed that feeling of unhappiness because it was just what I was used to, and which is quite crazy how our brains do that. I try to now attack everything that goes bad in my life with, okay, well, this is going to help somebody.
That's beautiful.
My next guest just secured his first Billboard Hot 100 hit.
My next guest music has been streamed almost 400 million times now.
Please welcome back to the show, Teddy Swims.
Please welcome Teddy Swims.
Teddy Swims, everyone.
I was working at a Chili's, you know, in 2019, and me and all my friends at the time, we did the Michael Jackson's Rock With You cover. It was like the first cover I put up. We woke up, I think the next day, with like 10,000 views on it. We're like, holy
wow.
Whoa. It's so great, like how like manifestation really works too, because we started June 25th of 2019, and December 24th of 2019, a day less than 6 months, I signed the deal with Warner, and the universe, God, whatever it is just like, was totally... We all put our heads together and said, this is what it is, and life just...
Your album's called I've Tried Everything But Therapy, Part One. Have you tried therapy yet?
I have not, man. And
what do you think is the thing that you're afraid to discuss or talk about the most? That,
you know, I don't know, man, because I feel very vulnerable. I don't have anything I wouldn't talk about, but I think there's some things about...
Wünschst du dir jemanden, der dich versteht wie kein anderer? Jemand, der deine Wünsche wahr werden lässt und mit dir das schönste Abenteuer deines Lebens erleben möchte? Die Commerce-Plattform Shopify revolutioniert Millionen von Unternehmen weltweit. Mit Shopify richtest du im Nu deinen Online-Shop ein, ganz ohne Programmier- oder Designkenntnisse. Dank der effizienten Einrichtung und intuitiven Social-Media- und Online-Marketplace-Integration kannst du über Instagram, eBay und Co. werben und verkaufen. Neue Zielgruppen zu erreichen, war noch nie so einfach. Shopify bietet auf einer einzigen, sicheren Plattform alle Tools, um dein Online-Business aufzubauen. Kostenlos testen und dein Business der Welt präsentieren. Shopify.de/try besuchen. Einfach Shopify.de/try eingeben und loslegen. Made for Germany. Powered by Shopify.
Welcome back, everyone, to the School of Greatness. Very excited about our guest. We have the inspiring Teddy Swims in the house, my man.
Thank you, man.
So good to see you, brother.
Yeah, you too. I'm happy to be here.
Big congrats on everything, man. I'm loving watching the evolution of your journey from, you know, a YouTube cover sensation to original music and just dominating the charts, dominating, you know, Spotify, YouTube, everywhere. I'm loving the soul, the passion you bring in your music and your work, and I'm just so happy for you. So congrats on everything. And I'm curious because I've been digging into some of your background, your story. You used to play football growing up, which I love. But you talk about your father in a big way as being like the greatest man you've ever met in your life, and just like the nicest guy who really showed up for you and your siblings. I'm curious to start. What was the biggest lesson that your father has taught you about life, music, and love?
Well, you know, I think. My father, man, is, if I could be half the man he is at all in my life, I think I'll be bigger than Michael Jackson, man. I really, truly, because just the heart that he shows to people, man, the time that he gives to people. There's so many times I've even introduced him to people as we've been on tour and stuff, where I've met friends through here, and, you know, and I've been like, well, look, man, you don't got a dad, man, my daddy will be your dad. Like, I swear he will. He's the best in the world, and he sure enough, man, he'll call me. Hey, man, how's so-and-so doing, man? Or he'll call them, and they'll call me. Yeah, I just talked to your dad, like, last week. Man, he calls me, like, every week and checks on me every week. And my dad is just really just always got time for everyone. And I think that's, like, one of the biggest things that he's taught me about love, to start there, is that there's always time, you know, and you're going to make something work for, and I don't care how busy you are. If it means something to you, you make time to...
Yeah.
Say, you know, hi, I love you. Or you make sure that little time that you have with somebody, they feel like they're important and they deserve that time and attention. And there's always a time to step away from something for what matters the most. And I think he's just always been so incredible about that, man. He's just steady, you know. And I think and humans aren't very good at being consistent, you know. And I think it's kind of impossible to be consistent always. You know, because we're humans, we're going to fail, we're going to fail each other, you know, and, but I don't see that man as, even some of the things he looks back and he thinks were like failures in his raising of us. It's just like, I look back at those moments. It's like, Dad, you hated that. I loved that. You know what I mean? He was like, when he was like, he always talk about how when he was always going to softball field, or when I was playing football, he was also like, you know, doing semi pro at the time, and he would always
go like, semi pro.
Yeah, and he would come like, you know, take me to practice in his pads, and then come pick me up, and then I'd go watch his games after he'd watch my little game, cool. And he'd be in his pads, and he was just like, yeah, I was just too worried about playing at the time, though. I was still a kid. I wish I was more. And I was like, Dad, it was the coolest ever that you were like, you know, picking me up, and I was at your bleachers with my little pads that's on, cool. Watching you. I was like, that's the coolest of my life. You know, it's like.
But he was worried about
it. Yeah, that. He was just like, well, I think I was too worried about playing at the time. And I was like, that shit was cool, man. That was awesome watching my dad do that. You know, so.
It was also, you got to see a model of someone, your father, go after his dreams.
Yeah.
And his passions, yeah. And his love. And
what he did for me, speaking of that, is that, like, you know, his dad died when he was 15, 16, mm-hmm. something like that. And so we didn't really have that much of a. Like that much of a figure is growing up, and especially that like prime time of growing and,
yes.
and evolving. And I think he was the first one too. When we went on his trip from Texas and came home, when I was 19, I was in cosmetology school going to cut hair, and
really
my sweet mother too. She's a hairstylist too and a barber. So what she was like, always telling me like, you can pursue your music, but you can have this as a background. You should go, you can just, you know, you can make your own schedule. You can have a backup plan. And so her sweetheart, man, she went and got her license to teach. Like she was going to the same school I was at the same time to like,
she was teaching
degree in cosmetology the same time I was going. So she could just like, she's like, I'll just go get my teaching degree so we can go to school together. And I can kind of teach it through it. Like, you know, so I was like, hell yeah, Mom, you know? But my dad, he's the first one. It's like, look, son, if you want to sing, man, you know, you should drop out of school and don't go back to college. You need to just drop out and just go for it, man. Because if you're going to look back at your life and say, well, why didn't I go put everything into this? He said, it's not going to happen if you don't put everything into it. And
so he encouraged you to drop out of school.
Yeah, he's the one that told me, just promise me you'll never go back. And I did. And it took me 10 years to, you know, to get to where I was, and I mean even further now. And I mean, he's just the most proudest man in the world, dude. There's not a gas station or CVS or anything he walks into that he's not like, man, you know Teddy Swims? Oh, look, that's my son, dude. That's my son right there. He's just so proud and so happy and follows me all over the damn world. And it's just,
that's incredible, man.
So excited, dude. He's the best guy in the world.
That's amazing, man. So how old were you when you dropped out of school?
I was 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was 12 years ago.
Yeah. And yeah, and then, yeah, by the time I was, I think I signed in 2019. Yeah, end of December 24th in 2019, I signed to Warner Records. So it was
5 years ago, almost 4.5 years
ago,
right?
Yeah, so I was, almost 10 years from that moment where we finally made it. But I've been working on music for forever. I mean, he was coming to my metal bands when I was in high school and stuff. And it's like, I don't really like that kind of son, but I mean, whatever.
Support you.
Yeah, I mean. And the kind of music I was making at the time, I don't know why he would give me that advice because my bands were terrible. So I was like, I don't know why he was like, go for it, son.
Yeah.
I guess he's like, you know, I feel like if my son sucked at something, I would have been like, I guess you'd still be supportive, but you know, I mean, he'll find it. He'll get his way.
Guess you don't want to get,
at least he had some faith in me. Yeah. Cause I don't know how, if I had a son, I'd be like, well, all right, you take your time with it, but you know, it wasn't very good.
Right. I mean, 10 years of pursuing a dream until you, I guess, quote unquote, made it. What were you doing for the last 10 years? Were you having jobs? Were you singing?
Yeah.
Were you singing open mics? Were you just doing
all that stuff,
different
man.
Bands?
Yeah.
Like, how did you survive and thrive for 10 years until you made it in the industry?
It wasn't a thrive by any means, but we made it through. A bunch of roommates moving back to their parents' houses when it wasn't working out, you know, and get stepped on and getting hurt a lot and, you know, losing a bunch of jobs and, you know, waiting tables for a long time and also not a good waiter at all by any means, you know, but I remember one of the best advice that I got from this guy, Roger Waters. He gave me the best advice when I first place I ever waited tables at this pizza place in the small town Social Circle in Georgia. And, he'd always be like, man, you're like the clumsiest server. You're like forgetful. Table one's been waiting on their ranch dressing for 5 hours now. You know what I mean? But damn it, man, you get good money because people like you. And as long as you make people feel comfortable and happy, they'll
they'll take a Diet Coke, you know, even if they ordered a Coke. Like, it's fine. We love Teddy. He's cool. Get, you know, whatever. Just, and so as long as you treat people well, I found that goes so far in life, you know, just charisma and care for people. It goes so far, you know, you can be stretched so thin, but that just taking that time just to love on somebody, they're like, okay, I don't need a ranch dressing, I guess. It's fine.
But you were fun. You were at a good attitude. You know,
man, that's all you can do, man. You gotta, nothing to steal your joy. That's for sure.
That's great, man. So during the last decade, I guess, while you're trying to, you know, figure it out and develop yourself, what was the most challenging time?
I think the most challenging time for me was like right in the between parts of, so I was working at a Chili's, you know, in 2019. And, I was also like the things on the covers and stuff was starting to go off. And, and so me and all my friends at the time,
YouTube was like, started that around 2018.
Or... Yeah. 2019, June 25th of 2019. Yeah. And so, June 25th of 2019 to, we did the Michael Jackson's Rock With You cover. It was like the first cover I put up because it was just 10 years since Michael had passed. And so I like wanted to do, I wasn't like to do covers, but I just wanted to put that up and just be like, here, pay some homage to the GOAT, right? And we woke up, I think the next day with like 10,000 views on it. We're like, holy man, this is huge. We're getting hammered, guys. This is massive. And I mean, 10,000 views now, if anything happens like that, I'm like, oh, I'm washed up, you know, it's, which is diminished returns, isn't it? But I remember we like woke up the next day, it's like 150,000. We're like, wow. Whoa. And so, we kept on doing the covers and as they were coming in, we were, basically, so me and, my band and my producer Lee and a bunch of us, we all moved into this house together. And my manager still to this day, my best friend, Luke, he was living in LA here and basically like got this Prius, pulled a U-Haul in the back and drove it all the way to Georgia. We all moved into a house together. It's like there was 12 of us living in this 5-bedroom house and we just put plywood walls up to like, you know, separate bedrooms and to make
it.
And then we made it like a 9-bedroom house with like 2 studios in it. And we were trying to, because we were at times like, yo, if we can take the pictures, we can design the merch. And we were even in our garage, like shipping out the merch as we're distributing it ourselves. And so we had like 15 people over there all the time, just working and around the clock, doing the covers, writing our own songs, producing everything, playing everything. We just figured if we could do it all ourselves, I was like, look, dude, we just need like 6 months to just figure this out. If everybody would just donate all the time that they have to this for just 6 months, I promise you guys, in 6 months, this will work. This is like what I just put a promise on it. And so we all moved in together and that was a very tough time because not only were all of us on top of each other all the time, but I was in a place where I could work maybe one day a week at Chili's or not at all. And I kind of had to quit my job before it was working, you know? And so you were just kind of like existing.
Scrapping by.
Just kind of scrambling and trying to do whatever you could to, because work would take you away from this, but then if you don't put everything into this, then this, you know, everything was suffering on both ends. And so you had to just kind of make a choice to go for it. And those guys really had to like kind of help me float by and get by. And we were really scraping it. But, and even when we first started doing the, you know, it was about October or November and stuff, we were starting to go do label calls and flying to New York and flying here to meet with labels and stuff. And it was, you know, we were like broke as hell. So we were also
taking
trying
buses.
And we were also trying to stay in hotels, but also tell the labels that like, oh, our YouTube business is crushing it. We're making so much money. We don't need you. So like
we need a hotel room.
but to try to like let them know we already had a great business going to try to get more leverage in the fact. But the real lie was like we were sinking in our pants and being like, you know, all tough about it. Like, yeah, we're good. We don't need this deal, you know, try to get a better one. And I mean, thank God it worked. But and my boys, you know, I'm so lucky to have a good foundation of a group of guys. And you know, and speaking of that 6 month, it's so great like how like manifestation really works too, because we started June 25th of 2019 and December 24th of 2019, a day less than 6 months, and on Christmas Eve of that, well, I signed the deal with Warner and it like, you know, put all the boys on salary. And it was it was the craziest thing, that just like manifestation just saying like 6 months is the time limit, boys, and I'll leave you alone if we can.
Wow.
And it was a day less. And like, just the universe, God, whatever it is just like, was totally, we all put our heads together and said, this is what it is. And life just.
Now, were you aware of like manifestation or visualization beforehand, or were you thinking about this or setting goals and
yeah,
timelines?
I mean, I'm always a big person of just like, you know, how, just what you say and what you look for in life and what you think you want out of life. It's like, you know, it's like going through your girlfriend's phone, you know, which you don't do. You're going to find something you're looking for, you know, but it doesn't have to, it's maybe not anything you're looking for, but if you're trying to find something to look around and peek under a crevice for something, there's going to be like a,
I didn't like that.
Something that you're like insecure about, you know? And I mean that in like a way of I guess I'm using that as an analogy for manifestation, which is a weird analogy for that.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, I feel like whatever you're looking for, you're going to find, is what I'm trying to say. And whatever you want to heighten out of your life, you can, you know, and you can make anything you want it to be, is what I'm trying to say.
Where did you learn this though? When did you start to develop that skill set?
I grew up, luckily, man, and I say this like principle wise, I'm very fortunate. My granddad on my mom's side is a Pentecostal pastor.
Uh-huh.
He's a very big, you know, he's very straight by the book kind of guy, you know, and I subscribe to a lot of those principles and a lot of those, the ways you treat people and your work ethic and stuff like that. But you know, I don't know if I would like, so like telling everybody they're wrong all the time though. You know, I'm not so that far on the Christian belief of that anymore, but, it taught me a lot, so much about, you know, how to treat people and how to ask for things out of life, you know, and how to say that you want this and how to do the work to get what you want out of life. And I just think every time I've ever said something, there was so many times too, when even when we first started this business, you know, and we got signed, and then we went through this pandemic, and it was like, you know, 2 years of us not being able to play, and we had kind of built our whole business through touring. And so I had my best friends were also, I guess, in some way my employees now, you know, and our business was like falling.
Really?
We weren't making money to like going on tour or doing anything like that. And so there was so many times where it was like, man, we don't know how we're going to make, you know, we don't know how we're going to make payroll this week, or we don't know how we're going to make payroll next week. And that's where it gets kind of weird, because, you know, the guys that you grew up with that are your best friends since middle school and high school that you're playing with, and you can't go tell them like, hey, man, I don't know how we're going to pay you guys Friday, but like, just know that
stick
like,
with me.
Yeah. And cause you don't want to say that, you know, but luckily I would just always go in there and just say like, you know what, dude, something's going to come through. Somebody's going to call, something's going to happen. And sure enough, it was like always, I know, not to take away from Luke and Curtis, I'm sure they were going out and looking for everything they could, but it would be sometimes too that we might just get a call about a private event that would just pay us like $100,000 real quick. And it would be like,
I'm bad.
We're safe for the next couple months, you know? And it was just always something when it was just like, I don't know, man, just whatever we got to do, just stick to the promise, And it just continues to, so every time I ever just get to like, if ever anything starts to be questionable or integrity gets on the line, it's like, no, just stick to the promise. We said this, and we're going to stick by this word and stand on that. And just,
wow.
And I think just standing on a word is what I really learned from a very early age, that life is going to come to you if you just stand on your word.
That's beautiful, man. Yeah. Now, but it was like almost 6 or 7 years of you, you know, after dropping out of school, I guess going all in on the music passion and career, until something happened, right? It was like 6 or 7 years until like you started doing the covers and started getting attention and awareness. How did you stay, I guess, inspired for those 6 or 7 years while you're working restaurant jobs and part-time jobs and trying to do gigs on the weekends? How did you stay in belief that something was going to come from this?
I just felt like that's what my deal, my life was, you know, and there's just nothing I just don't think there would be anything else I could do. I don't know. I would have never gotten through. And I'm very fortunate too, that if I was working at this place and it closed down, or I lost this job, or I lost this house, I had people in my life, luckily, who were always just willing to just say like, here, I'll float you for this, or like, you know, come sleep on the couch for a bit. Or, you know, my best pal, Jesse, man, he's been my best friend since we were in middle school. And his dad too is like, he still plays guitar in my band too and writes with me. And his dad was just our hero, man. He would take me in, and I mean, they did like commercial plumbing. And so he would try to give me some job. I can't even damn drive a nail though, my dude. I'm like, I'm so bad at it. But he'd go back behind me and be like, sucks. But he would just, you know, still, he'd even take me to the backyard and be like, here, just build me a fucking fire pit or something. Just what something you could do. I'll pay $12 an hour. You know, just come out here and work. Here, cut my grass or something. Yeah, here's some money. Come sleep on the couch, man. You're good. And I'm just grateful that I think everybody in my life was also like, look, we don't want you to do anything else. And so I know it's going to work, you know?
Wow,
and
man.
I'm very fortunate to have had believers. I don't think I was like ever in a spot where I know a lot of people in a successful place can say that all my haters and everybody that didn't believe in me. And I can honestly say, I don't think I've ever had that point of like people just telling me, no, you can't do this. No, it's very slim chance that you could do this, or you should think of something different. Because, and I don't know if that comes from my, because people actually believe that, or it's because of my willingness to say, if somebody ever told me that they just should not be in my life at all. You know, like I just don't entertain that idea. And I don't like, I would never entertain that idea for anybody else either that I talk to. If it's like, you want to do something, go do it. You know, I got permission from my father to go do something. And sometimes all people really need, especially children, is like just permission to just,
that's true,
go for it, you know? And that permission goes so far. It's,
some people don't have that permission from their parents though.
Yeah,
they're like, you
that's
know what?
Tough.
Stay
yeah.
in school, go do this thing. You're like, maybe you can try for a little bit this music or art or sports career, but really you need to go get a real job. And
that's tough.
That's hard
yeah.
to overcome that.
Yeah, because I had one of my best friends I had since preschool. He worked with us forever. And, you know, his dad was always on him about that too. And was like, you know, hey man, or if his grades would start to fall, he would be like, it's because you're playing that guitar too much, or you're doing this too much. Mm. And, you know, and he was like a full-time electrician, you know? And so like a union electrician, and he kind of wouldn't push his kid into, look, you need to be doing that. You need to be focused on just a good collar job and making sure that your family's straight, get a family, get a kid, and go to college and do this whole, you know? And it was just like, I think in some degree that's healthy. I wouldn't ever be mad at some parents for doing that, because I do understand the ideal of wanting some sort of consistency for your child and safety net for your child. And I think that's a beautiful thing to do. But just I think it's when it came to dampening, you know, the dream or the like yeah. heart, and that you could see the light kind of go out of his eyes every time. That was just like, put that f-ing guitar down, you know? And it's like, sometimes you need it. I'm of course, I don't have kids, so I would never tell anybody how to raise theirs, but I think he did an amazing job. He's a great man, you know, but I just, if there would have been more chance for him to mm-hmm. be permission, you know, yes. he would probably be wherever he wants to be at this
Absolutely,
point in time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Permission is the key when it comes to having someone start to believe in themselves. I think a lot of people struggle with belief in themselves and their talents. There's so many people I've seen over the years have way more talent than me in so many things, but not just go after what they wanted. How did you continue to believe when you weren't making much money for those years though? How did you continue to, was there ever a time where you're like, maybe this music and this career thing isn't for me, I'm gonna go full time into something else? Or did you always believe eventually it would happen?
See, that's my thing is, no, that never happened. And I just like, even those times where I was, one of my last bands I was in, there was a guy I was working with, and you know, his whole thing was like, look, man, this is my last hoorah with this music thing, you know? And if it doesn't work this time, then I'm gonna just give it up, you know? Cause I just like, I've been at this for so long and I've seen things fall through, and I had a band that was touring for a while and that fell through. And he's like, I'm just getting old and this is my last hoorah with this. And if it doesn't happen, then I'm giving it up. And I'm like, well, that's exactly why it's not going to happen, man. You know, I think, and not to knock against anybody there, but for me, it was just, this is all that I am and all that I have and all that I was going to be. And it was just very, so important to me that there was never a sight that I lost of this. I never lost sight of like, I want to do this and I need to do this. It's like, that was the only thing that I was going to be happy doing. That was what I wanted and what I saw for my life from a very young age. And I think I never lost that. And I think that's the important thing. I mean, even though like, I think the self-belief is that I could get to where I wanted to be. Mm. Not that I ever felt like my talent was going to get me there, but I think I'm just now even starting to, some of my first bands, man, are just so trash. You could find, dude, you could find my very first band. I was a senior in high school. It's called Heroic Beer. can find our EP on YouTube still, and it's so garbage, man. It's a metal band too, and we're like post-hardcore, and it's so garbage. But I look back and I'm like, why did you guys tell me I could sing? This is so bad, dude.
Really?
Why you told me I could sing? It's so bad. But you know, I mean, thank God they did, because I knew I wanted it, man. I knew we had something, and you know, here we are. So.
Did you rehearse a lot with your voice growing up? Were you singing all
the
time?
Yeah, all
were
the
you
time.
Trying different genres?
Absolutely, man. Really? And I think that's what's also so beautiful about the voice. You know, it's the instrument that you can take and practice anywhere you go at any point. You know, if I was a guitarist, and you can't just use that everywhere. So I mean, I was never not singing. You know, if I'm walking around, if I'm pouring drinks to go to a table, if I'm behind the bar pouring drinks, I'm humming to myself. I'm
really
practicing little runs on my way home. I'm just always singing. It's
always
just, it's the best feeling. You
I
know?
Mean, growing up in a small town in Georgia, though, and you know, playing football, were you celebrated for that, or was it kind of made fun of? Like, oh, what are you doing with this?
No, luckily for us, it was great. I also got really kind of late started in it, you know, because I was like my 10th grade year. Me and Jesse got into theater together, and that year I was doing football and theater, and then I kind of, after that, stopped football and kind of pursued, you know, chorus and theater and all that stuff. But it was not a thing. I, like, when we were doing theater in high school, it was like, it was cool.
It was cool, huh?
It was cool. And like, me and all my buddies were in there, and we'd gotten all the dudes involved in theater. It was like, we'd go to like thespian, like a big thespian conference. And it was like, we had so many guys in our theater
really?
Program, you know, which is I'd like really like guys, like shotgun and beers guys, you know what I mean?
Really?
Like, it's like,
that's interesting.
We had gotten everybody in theater and made it cool. You know, it was like, hell yeah. It was a dude's party in there, you know,
that's amazing.
It was quite funny. Cause we ended up like our school, I think ended up looking for more girls about the amount of just straight dudes we had in there, you know? And it was a blast for us. I think I just had a different experience on that.
That's cool, man. Now, Teddy Swims is you know, your stage name. Jayden Dimmesdale is, you know, your birth name. What made you want to create a stage name, and do you ever have any insecurities being your authentic name versus your stage name?
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, so weirdly enough, Swims was like something I was going to go by. So this project originally started with me and my best pal Addie Maxwell, who is a writer and producer and guitarist in my band as well, and known him for years. And we were working on this band called Wild Heart I was in for a while, and he started producing like hip hop beats and stuff, and was sending them to certain artists. And he's one day he was just like, dude, we should try, like, you know, just rapping on something. And so we did. And luckily, my good friend Tyler Carter, he's in his band Issues, and Woe Is Me for long, like one of my biggest heroes, best pals in the world, my real mentor and friend, and just the dearest person in my heart, man. And he came over one day to get tracks ready for his tour with Issues in Europe, and he comes over, here's like our one rap song, and he's like, yo, this is dope. You guys should come on tour for my solo tour next month. And I was like, well, we have this one song. He's like, look, dude, just get 30 minutes of music. I'll be back in a month. And we'll go on my solo tour. And
wow.
So March of 2019, me and Addie go on tour as just rappers. And that was like the first Teddy Swims thing. But I was just going to go by Swims as like someone who isn't me sometimes. And then Tyler at the time was like, well, everybody already calls you Teddy. And I've just been called Teddy forever because, you know, just of my stature and joy, I guess. And he's like, well, let's put Teddy and Swims together and call it Teddy Swims. It's an awesome name. And I was like, I kind of hate that, dude. And he was like well that's my tour, so I'm putting it on the flyer. And sure enough it just stuck, and you know, here's Teddy Swims now.
Do you still hate it?
No, I mean, it's grown on me, I guess. It's too late now, isn't it, you know? But everybody hates their own name, I guess. And I think and the reason I started getting called Teddy anyway, it's Jayden was always kind of hard for people. It was like always like,
is it Jayden? Jason?
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So the more, I mean, especially when you're waiting tables, if I'm just like, hi, I'm Teddy, and everybody's like, oh yeah, Teddy. It's just like such an inviting, disarming name. And I think it just kind of happened. And I don't really, there's not really too much of a difference. Like, I wouldn't say that Teddy Swims is ever a character I'm portraying, or Jayden Dimmesdale's any different. I look at it as a nickname and not like an alias, or
sure,
like
sure.
a character, you know, because it's always been a nickname. And And I get called both all the time. And so that's why I say, you know, I don't care what you call me, as long as you call me, man. You call me. So I'm like, I got nothing but love for you, baby. And I'm just happy to be in your mind at all.
Wow, man. But do you ever get insecure on stage or have fear before you go on?
No, you know, what's crazy is that I used to, when I was in high school and I first started doing like theater and stuff, I used to get so nervous where I just sit and stare at a wall, like just blank for like 3 hours, not eat, not talk to anybody. I was just like, throw up. I was just nervous as hell, man. And nowadays I find that I'm like kind of more insecure or like anxiety riddled like all the time except for the stage. Now, I mean, I do get like the only nerves I really get before a show, I don't really get like no butterflies or anything, but I always know like 30 minutes before a show, like clockwork, man. If 30 minutes before stage, I get a bubble in here. Doesn't matter how solid I've been, I'm going to go paint the back of a toilet, bro. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's like, it just immediately is like, just turns to fluid. It's like, and I'm like, must be 30 minutes. Yep. Sure enough, it's 8:30, you know? And
it's like right up until the moment you got to go
on. Yeah, right on. And I'm like, this is the worst time.
I used to have that in football too, man. Like right before I have my pads on, I got to take them off.
It's always that. But you know, I think also too, if you stop getting those nerves, then, you know, then you don't love it enough. And I think there's gotta be some sort of like nerves. If you walk in there, I was literally just on, I was on the shop the other day and LL Cool J was on there too. And it was so cool to meet him and hear some wisdom from him. And he said that same thing. And it really stuck with me because he was like, you know, if you ever get to that point, there's no nerves. That means you don't care enough. You walk in there all caught, you know, I got this. It's like, man, no, you should have a little bit of like some excitement and some anxiety about getting on there. But I've always been, when I got on there though, it's the most natural place for me to be. It just feels like home when I'm up there, and it'll get my shoes off when I'm on that stage, and I just get to feel solid, you know, ground and respect and try to create a safe place for people to, because I get to do this job where I get to walk up there and just basically just trauma dump on strangers, you know, and just get to just say, like, cry about some girl that broke my heart 3 years ago or something, you know, and put it out there for people and talk about my journey of like self-care, self-love, or when did I start fucking loving myself, and how did I hate myself for so long, and you know, start just talking to people like this on stage, and I get to really just have these moments of speaking just openly and vulnerably. And I think that outlet that I get to do that is not only been so necessary and therapeutic for me, but it's also great when people get to come and we do a meet and greet or something, they say like, you know, this song got me through my divorce, or
wow,
you know, my husband was meant to be here with me, but he passed in October. And so, you know, I brought my friend, but I just want you to know, like, your music has got me through that. Or your song Amazing was our first dance and he's no longer with us. And it's like that kind of stuff right there is just like,
wow,
it's heavy, but it's so beautiful to hear that kind of stuff, because, you know, you know that everything that you're writing about, whether it's a love song or whether it's from a place of personal pain, it's so specific to my little personal pain, but then somebody else has their own personal pain or their own memories attached to somebody that they dated, or their own moment with doing them in a car when they first heard this song, and now it's their and their girlfriend's favorite song, and it's just such a beautiful thing, and it makes you feel like all the stuff that you went through was so necessary to go through, like even that little heartbreak that I went through, all the pain and anguish that I went through on something becomes now so necessary, and the difference I get to make, and all that time I spent moping around like thinking woe is me or that I was hurting, now I look back at that stuff and I see how necessary it was for every little issue that happened in my life, and I try to now attack everything that goes bad in my life with, okay, well, this is going to help somebody.
That's beautiful.
And I try to just look at it that way. I think that's a healthy way for me to look at it,
because
every heartbreak I go through, well, this is going to help me and help somebody else, and
that's true.
And I think it's so wonderful that I get an outlet to talk about stuff, and I think it's so important that everybody has a voice and they talk about, if you don't talk about your issues or tell your story to people, then they don't also get to, you know, then they can know that they're not alone, or they can, or better, you can help them from ever going through that, because you've already been through that. You can say like, hey, don't make this mistake. And you can help somebody from going through it, or just let somebody know they're not alone. And I think it's just important that everybody just speaks you know, they're cool, paying. Man. It's wow. important.
Now you mentioned, you know, you get to, when you're on stage, you get to, I guess, unload your traumas and talk about all these insecurities or fears or love that you have in your heart at that moment. And you mentioned you used to hate yourself in some ways. What was the thing you used to hate about yourself the most? And when did you start to love yourself in a more full, authentic way?
I think a lot of times in my life, it was, there's a lot of things that came from, I think from this place of, I don't want to like blame it so much on like religious situations, but I think some things growing up were just kind of like, it was meant to be modest into yourself and hold things in and not letting anybody know what was going on. And if there was anything kind of going on in our family, we're all so tight knit. So it's like, you just kind of like, we kind of had to, you kind of have to look perfect as a pastor or something, you know, and those guys are also going through things. And
yeah.
sometimes they're not, there's not people that they go to and just can say like, yo, I'm falling apart here. Or like, I'm struggling with thoughts of suicide or something, you know, there maybe is a pastor going through that, you know, and it's like, and they can't talk about that openly with somebody, or they can't talk about certain mental health situations that they got going on, because they yeah. have to be the, God is the answer. And my life is perfect because I'm so close to God. And it's just, it doesn't work like, and I think there's just a lot of things in my life that I kind of held in and kind of kept in, and things that I was insecure about.
Was it shame or was it insecurity or was it guilt?
All of that stuff, you know, all of that stuff I think came in. And I mean, not, and I won't just blame it all on religious things, but I think it's, you know, also just, I think a lot of time too in my life, I was always a big kid. And so I was struggled with weight a lot, and the way I viewed myself, and with eating habits a lot, and the way I viewed myself, and what was eating to get through this, or was, you know, just handling situations certain ways. And, I had a big, you know, problem with that growing up. And, it's just always also feeling, I was just always sensitive little boy too.
Yeah,
took everything so to heart. And
me too, man.
So everything was just so a personal attack, you know, I think the moment that really switched for me is right during the pandemic, or right before sometime, I think it's 2020 or so. So I got a chance. Dominique Wilkins had hit me up on Instagram, and
basketball player.
Yeah, the Hawk, man. He's one of my greatest friends. I got to sing at his wedding like you know, maybe a month or two ago.
Wow, that's cool.
He's the best guy ever. He hit me on Instagram, was like, I want you to come play at my birthday party. So he actually coincidentally lives in Conyers too, where I'm from. And so we went over there, and we played, you know, and he gave me this signed jersey. I did a lot of stuff with him.
That's
and
cool.
He's beautiful. And he's like, dude, are you a wrestling fan? And I was like, yeah, of course, man. I got three brothers. I'm a huge wrestling fan, right? And he said, well, Diamond Dallas Page is coming through. And Diamond Dallas Page is like, this is my hero. And he's still my hero. And so I met him, and he went up having some cocktails, and I was like, hey, man, I was about 300 pounds at the time.
Really?
And I told him, I was like, look, man, you know, because he's doing the DDP yoga stuff, right? And he's like, look, man, you know, I really want to, you know, I'd like to try your stuff out or see if there's anything you can do. And he's like, well, come over, man, come over to the house, come do some yoga with me, come, like, let's get together. And he called me the next day, and he's like, look, man, I know we were drunk last night, but I meant what I said. If you want to come over tomorrow. We'll start doing it. You can come to my house every single day, and we'll start talking. I believe in you. Your voice is amazing. Come on. Let's. He said, all you got to do, man, is get this 6-inch piece of real estate figured out and own that, and we'll figure it out.
Wow.
You know? That dude gave me so much, and still to this day calls me, if not every day, hits me every day. He calls me weekly, and he's like, we got to get weekly calls. Stay on it. He's talked about, like, this year, he's like, I want to come out for like 4 or 5 days on tour and just come sit with you and, you know, just make sure you're straight. Dude, he helped me lose 65 pounds.
Come on.
Congrats. I also, you know, I've been put about 20 back on probably from tequila on tour last year. But
I was going to say, based on your videos from 4 years ago, I was like, you look a lot leaner. Yeah. You look a lot healthier. Your skin looks better.
Yeah.
Like,
and so there was a time where I was at one moment, the biggest part of it was, I was living in this house, and I was kind of sinking, and this girl I was dating at the time, she had a child, and I'd known him for a very long time, for about, like, he was 6 at the time, and for most of his life, I'd known him, and his dad really wasn't around, and his dad was just kind of in and out of his life, and on drugs and stuff, and I know what that was like because my little brother's mom is the same way, and I saw my dad struggle through that. And I think I found something, and I fell in love with that kid while we were dating. And you know, she ended up kind of going back to her baby daddy. And I really at the time was like, I want to do whatever it takes to, even if I got to get a full time job and still pursue music, I would do whatever it takes to make sure that this kid's okay.
Wow.
And, I ended up really falling in love with that kid. We still talk to this day. I love that kid. It was when that kind of split and she just left to go back to this unsafe thing. It really kind of put me down. And at that same time that she left, my roommates moved out. I was like 4 months behind on rent.
Yeah.
My car had broken down. The transmission went out on the way to work, and I had to walk 2 miles to work. And then they tell me that the place is closing down. And so it was like everything at once just like really just fell apart, right? And so I was really sinking, and I called my dad at the time, and I was like, look, man, I need to just come in and just, if I could just throw my mattress on the floor, I'd be stoked. And it's like, of course, baby. And that was, coincidentally enough, was wild, as that was like right at the beginning of 2019 where we started working on the Teddy Swim stuff. Yeah. And because we were working in Loganville right by my dad's house on this stuff. And the things, like, it's always like one gigantic loss for one. I think when everything is falling apart in your life, that was like that was just making room for everything to start building. And I find that life works so much like that too, where there's just one gigantic loss for like something to, I think it just kind of makes way for good things. And now I try to change my perspective on that so much because of DDP. Gosh, you know, you got to own that 6-inch piece of real estate. And he taught me so much about just like, look, man, you got to do small things like look into your eyeballs in the morning. Have you ever looked at yourself in the eyes in the mirror and said, like, I love you. You're doing great, man. Don't, you know, just like talk to yourself.
Right.
And tell yourself you're worth it. Tell yourself you're worthy of love. And I felt like so long I was choosing relationships, and I was getting stepped on by people because I wanted to give people love and a chance to do something. But I was taking more than I should have because maybe I was also trying to be some consistency for people that I never had or they didn't have, or maybe I was trying to do something unrealistic. I don't know. But I find it, I heard this one beautiful advice in a meet and greet not too long ago. This therapist was like, I'm a therapist and I'd like to give you a little word if I can. And she said, the way people treat you is a reflection of the way that they see you. The way you let people treat you is a reflection of how you see yourself. And it just like stuck with me and changed my life forever from that
point.
I was like, yeah, okay, maybe I should just, there's a way to treat people well and love on people, but there's also a way to notice when they're hurting you, you know?
Right.
And I felt like I was so long in my life that I let people kind of, there was also, I think sometimes I just chose the same pattern because there was something about being hurt or being held down that I think was also, I was weirdly kind of needing for some inspiration to
really
be the greatest like artist version of myself or to be in pain or something. I don't know why I wanted that. Maybe that was the consistency, was just being in just turmoil all the time. And I needed that feeling of unhappiness because it was just what I was used to. And I'd rather
familiar.
I'd rather be familiar than uncharted happy territory, which is quite crazy how our brains do that, you know? And so now even in my life, I'm with somebody now that's like very good to me, and I'm happy, and everything in my life is coming greatly. And I find that I could still write songs, and I was like,
from a place of beauty and love and joy and peace.
And even if I still write songs about heart, I can always go back and tap into those emotions. I don't have to be there right now. And I don't have to just like constantly put myself in hurtful places, you know? And I don't know why I do that. I don't know why we did that.
Because you see you hear these great songs where an artist created them from a place of pain or sadness or loss or heartache, right? And I always think like, okay, this is a beautiful song or this is a beautiful piece of art, but isn't there a way to create art from harmony and peace and love
there
and
certainly
abundance
is. Yeah.
That can also move and change the world?
Yeah, like, absolutely there is. Yeah. And I'm learning that daily, you
really?
Know, and it's just like something I have to always see, like, it's okay to be happy, dude. It's fine. Just be happy. It's probably the best for you.
When did you start feeling happier and loving yourself then? Did it happen overnight? Was it a months of practice of doing these rituals and habits?
It's an everyday decision, you know. I find that happiness is truly a decision you got to make. And love is a decision you got to make. You wake up every day with something that, like, in your heart. I mean, even if you're with a partner for a long enough time, you're not going to wake up every day like, wow, what a great another day to love you again. You know, it's, that's a, you know, you got to wake up and you love things despite you. You're happy despite of things. And you have to decide it. Like, you got to just continue to train your brain to say, you're not upset. Just, you're happy, man. Like, everything's good. Some days I find myself about stuff and I'm like, what are you about? Come on, dude. Life is good. And you're so loved and you're so cherished and people love you and you love people and you got good things and a great family and friends and foundation. Like, what the hell is your problem, dude? Come on, just get it together. Like, why are you like, waking up all, yeah, you know, like, don't be a little, get up, just smile, man. It's okay.
Someone watching or listening right now might be thinking, well, Teddy, that sounds good because you've made a bunch of money now and now you're famous and you've got success and you're going on world tours, so it's easy to be happy now. But what do you say to people that, you know, are like, I'm struggling, I'm going through it, I'm working multiple jobs, my relationship isn't working out, I'm overweight, I'm not feeling good about myself. How do you speak into them joy and positivity on how they can shift their mindset to feel loved and happy?
I would say personally, happiness is never easy, you know? And I think anybody anywhere in their life is allowed to feel the way that they feel. And I think I did the same thing when I always told myself, I'll be happy when I get to this, you know, or I'll be happy when I get to this level or when I get to this pace or when I can do music full time, all my problems will go away. And that was the biggest wake up call for me. Is when I was able to finally do music full time, I was like the most depressed I ever been because I thought that was going to answer all my problems, you know, but that was like maybe answering a financial problem or like a problem that I didn't get to do what I loved full time, but that was never the issues that was really happening. The issues were way deeper than that.
And what were the main issues?
Was all the things that, you know, I've been discussing, the things that I've held in my whole life that I was insecure about, the things that I was hating myself for, the ways that I was living, the things that I was doing, the people I was around that were breaking me down, stepping on me, and the things that the people that were not valuing me and me not valuing myself. And it all came from, like, so when I got to this point, I said, well, something's clearly got to change, because I thought once I got here, I'd be happy. And again, dude, it's not easy to be happy. It's not, it's something you got to, the pursuit is for everybody, right? You know, the pursuit of it is what we need, but happiness is something you got to wake up and choose. And it's hard. It's harder some days than others. And it's hard on everybody. And of course, you know, I can't speak for anybody with whatever their situation is going, anyone more successful or really struggling at the bottom. I can't tell them how to be happy or that you should just wake up and put it aside and decide to be happy. You can't do that either. But, you know, whatever there is in your life that you can find to cling to, that's what kept me alive truly, is that even though I got to that point and I was like, wait, there's underlying issues I wasn't addressing, I would tell you that I had a North Star of what I wanted and what I was here for. And so I think the only thing that kept me going while I was in the bottom of the barrel was that this is what I wanted to be. And this is when I get here, I'll be happy. And I know that was not even true, but I had something that I was grabbing for, and I had something that was pulling me out of the bottom all the time. And I'm grateful that there was something to stay around for. There's something to cling to. And as long as you have your reason, then I'd just say, man, make sure you have a reason. Because if there's nothing for you, there's no reason, there's nothing to love that's keeping you here, then I hope there's a way that somebody can find that. And you gotta just have one thing to cling to, one thing that just keeps you here, you know?
Absolutely.
It's without it, there's nothing.
Man, for any artist, musician, singer, creative individual watching or listening right now who hasn't made it yet, who isn't making it full time, who isn't making a full time living or doing what they want full time, but they have a dream and a passion to become more with their art, what would you tell them about fame, success, and money that you know now that you didn't know 5 years ago?
I would say try to be, that's a tough question.
Like, what is fame, success, and money taught you having it now versus 5 years ago not having it?
I would say that money now to me is now that we were dealing with a lot more of it, but $20 still means what it meant when I was either buying a bottle or I was making it to work, you know, and like $20 still means what it meant to me. And a dollar, the value of a dollar is just always stays the same. At least in my brain, I always try to make sure it stays the same and that I know how much a $20 bill can do. And no matter how many of those I have, I know what they can do and know how much that can do for somebody and in my life, you know, and how much. And I try to know that it's coming and it's going and it's fleeting, of course. But, and I think with success too, I find that, I think my version of success is, I think defining your own version of success and what success means is really what the whole ideal is, because you can get to this level, mm-hmm. but then there's such a different level. Like, you know, if you, they say that like the human eye sees 20 miles ahead of it, right? You know, and so if you're looking 20 miles ahead, you walk that 20 miles and then there's another 20 miles and it's as far as the eye can see. And so I always find that I'm just like, as soon as I get here, I'm like, this is like cool, but I don't, you know, I want, like, what if I'd have died at number two, I'd have been like, this sucks. And I would have been so hurt, but I'm also like, at like 99.9% of people don't, even more than that, you know? And so I'm like, why am I? So I try to constantly just, I think I find a way to define success and what success means to me. And I think that's just important for people to do. And I think what that means for me is this, I think success is like when you can offer somebody the opportunity or the ability to have the same success.
Yes.
And I truly think whatever I can do to, when I've been able to build a studio and I've been able to put my friends on a salary, or I've been able to bring them into writing rooms and see them flourish as writers and producers and writing songs for artists that are putting songs out, or being their own artist and putting their own songs out. And I think that's truly what I get my happiness, like my most success from, is like watching them flourish because we were able to provide an opportunity for this person, or that opportunity provided to this person. And it's seeing kids come up that are at shows and they're standing in the front and they're 9 years old and they come to the show and they're like, they want to be singers, you know, and mm-hmm. just reach out and give them a pair of sunglasses while you're singing up there. And you know, that just changes their life. Or you bring them backstage after and hug on them and take a picture and give them a little word. And it's like, that stuff is success. You know, that's what success looks like.
Sure.
In my opinion. And I think it's important for someone that if you want success, it's important to define what that looks like for you.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a clear definitive line of what success is, then you're going to be chasing it, never know you actually have it, you know?
Right. And what about fame? What has fame taught you now that you've experienced it and people know who you are?
It's quite strange. I think I try my best to be, like some people I find are like, there's a certain like separation that happens when you have, when somebody, and it doesn't have to be fame. It's like how famous you are to somebody. I think it's like, You could be a level of famous, but people treat you with you just a regular guy, right? But some people, when they look at you, and it depends on how big you are in their life. Some people, I find that all they do is listen to Teddy Swims, and they're like, they're the biggest Teddy Swims fan in the world. And I'm so honored for that. I'm so absolutely honored for that. But I find it such a weird thing when somebody's like, you know, they come to a meet and greet, and they like, you know, they're just shaking and they're like, I don't know what to say. I love you. And, you know, and it's such a sweet thing, but it's quite an exchange that you have to get used to, because mm-hmm. you're like, you know, they start crying immediately. You give them a hug. You're like, oh, that's such an honor that you like feel that way to be around me. In my presence, you're like all broken down and shaking. And it's like, it's such a beautiful thing, but it's such a thing to get used to, because you just want to be like, hi, how are you? Thank you so much for listening to my stuff. I love you so much. And, you know, and they're just like, it's like, they're just blown away by just like, oh my God, like this presence of, that is really not any different. I don't know. Because to me, I'm just a fat kid from Conyers, you know? And so, so getting treated that way is such a beautiful experience, but it's quite a jarring experience to go through. People just not really thinking you're human, kind of. And you're like, oh, baby,
bring it back down.
I'm not all that, you know?
How do you manage your ego or your mind or your heart or your humility when that is going to continue to happen more and more? You're going to be number one. You're going to be selling out arenas. What's your process for making sure it doesn't, you know,
I don't
make
think
you it, a bad person?
I don't think it could, man, because I think there's a thing that happens. I don't know why people change when they do this, because humility and people, and like, I was taught like one good advice, you know, and I say this all the time. They said, like, you know who the most important person in the world is? It's you, because when I'm here with you, it's our time together, and I'm making sure that I'm fully engaged in this conversation. And if you get 5 seconds with somebody, 10 years with somebody, you make sure every moment you spend is right there. And their time is just as valuable as mine. And I don't show up late to things. I hate to be, and not knocking anybody does, and sometimes things happen, but just when you start acting as if your time is more valuable than somebody else's, and even if it is dollar sign wise, it's not. Like, they, especially when people who are dropping their kids and are bringing their kids to a Teddy Swim show, and their time is actually what's so valuable. Their time is way more valuable than mine, you know, and they're investing in me and caring about me, and I think when you start treating people like they're lesser than, or that their time is less valuable than yours, or that you are worth more than somebody, I think that's like, I don't think I have that bone in my body to be like, I'm this, you know. It's like, I don't see myself as that. I don't plan on it. I never want to feel like, oh, I'm the best, you know.
Sure.
I think I will strive to be, but as soon as I feel like I'm the best, and there's no growth left.
Yeah, you know? That's a good mindset, man.
Yeah,
that's a great mindset. I mean, your album's called "I've Tried Everything But Therapy, Part One." Have you tried therapy yet,
though? I have not, man. And you know, I talked about it too before this album came out. I was like, look, dude, this is my promise to myself. When I get this album out, I'm gonna go to therapy. And it's been such a whirlwind that, I mean, I know there's always time. Like, I can make time to do this and do a 30-minute Zoom here or here or here.
Yeah,
or here.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And this whirlwind, I think I've just been kind of like, maybe not ready yet or something. And I'm planning on doing it, but
it took me until I was 31 to start for me.
Yeah. So it's perfect time.
Right time for you.
I think it is. And I think even more so now that I am in a good place, I think it might be a perfect time to start, not being just like, you know, I think in a good place is probably a great place to start. You
absolutely.
Know?
Yeah.
I think it's good at any time. And I agree that it's good for everyone, but I don't know what it is. I don't know why I haven't started yet.
Why did you want to title it this, even though it's something you've never experienced yourself?
Well, I think it was a funny name too, just for the sake of, you know, I've done everything except for therapy. You know, I've tried everything that I could to make myself, like, you know, as good as I can, and then therapy's probably the next step. And I think in naming it that too, it started conversations like these, which is so important to me, because you know, I think in times before, and maybe that's why there might still be some stigma in my brain I'm trying to get rid of, because, and some generational curse of people just being like, hold it in, it's tough. And I've been doing that my whole life, you know, we've been discussing. And so I think I wanted to just kind of open the door to talk about it and talk
that's
about
beautiful,
it.
That's beautiful,
man. And the more that I've had conversations about this is, you know, been like, hey, have you tried it yet? Or, and it also keeps me like accountable, and it also keeps me talking about my emotional place. And,
beautiful, man.
Yeah, you know, I think hopefully it just helps people start opening their mouths about that more, and maybe it inspires somebody else to, or maybe when I do, then maybe more people will. But I probably gotta set the example myself, you know what I mean?
What do you think is the thing that you're afraid to discuss or talk about the most? That,
you know, I don't know, man, because I feel very open, and I can talk about
anything.
You seem
very vulnerable.
And I'm very lucky that I feel very vulnerable. I don't have anything I wouldn't talk about, but I think there's some things about like my habits of coping that maybe I'm scared of changing. Maybe it's the,
like, from heartbreak or from loss or from
sadness.
I think
it's just in general, like the certain things, the tics I do, or the ways that I handle my stress and emotions, or the ways that. What if I find out, oh, there's a way better way of handling this than drinking? And I'm like, well, I like to drink when I'm sad, though. Oh, yeah. So
you're familiar with it.
Yeah, you know, it's exactly.
It's like a buddy.
Yeah.
It's like a buddy, and
exactly.
You don't want to let go of your buddy.
Exactly, man. It's a buddy,
it's
that's probably like
a friend.
It's like a toxic relationship that you're like not ready to walk away from. Yeah, yeah.
It's literally putting poison in you.
Yeah.
But it's a comfortable, familiar feeling.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, not just booze, too, but I think just all my other coping mechanisms, like, maybe it's even chewing on my nails or the inside of my cheeks. Maybe it's little ticks that I have here and there.
Yeah,
maybe,
man.
Maybe it's too much about discovering those things, you know, that are like, that I might have to change and not be so stuck in my ways anymore. Once I don't want to be stuck in my ways, but there's something so protective inside of me that's like
100%.
No, don't change this. It's working. And it's
what's gotten you here.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's also a protection of that too. Well, what if I fall on my face after I get fixed, which is not even a thing. Nobody like fixes you, but you know what I mean? There's just this stigma I think I'm still working through, and I won't know until I really just go take the step, and it probably will be way different than I'm even explaining it, you know? Man. And so I just got to get there, you know?
Well, the thing I love that you're talking about is, you know, on the humility and fame side of things and how you just feel like you'll always be growing. And I just feel like something like therapy or call it coaching, whatever you want to call it, it's going to allow you to just keep growing as a human inside and outside so you can serve more people at a better level.
Yeah,
that's sure, the way man. I look at it. And I look at you as, you know, it's the first time we've met. We've messaged online a few times. I've seen your work for a while, but I see you, and the more I see you in front of you, as an incredible leader and a voice to be of service to humanity, to express your voice in a beautiful artistic way that can connect with people with what they're going through. Whether it's something challenging or something beautiful in their life, you can use your voice and your artistry to empower and uplift individual souls, hearts, and minds around the world. And the more you continue to evolve, it's not about fixing or being perfect or like letting go of every negative habit that you have, but just being aware of the root cause of why you do these things.
Yeah, sure.
And saying, okay, does this serve me and my art and humanity at the highest level? Maybe I never get rid of this, but maybe I improve a little bit here and there. And I did a little bit of yoga for this season of my life, and I'm going to try something else. It's like, I'm going to enter relationships in a different way, whatever it might be. And then you're going to have that experience and be able to express that experience to humanity from a place of service and growth within yourself. And I think that's a beautiful thing that you're doing, and you're on this journey. And just you even talking about it as the title of your album is allowing you to express this personal growth journey. So I'm just really excited for you. Whether you do it now or in 20 years, I'm excited for your journey of growth because it's impacting lives around the world. And it's really cool, man.
You're an incredible talker, man. Hell yeah, dude. You're so good at talking, man. Yes, well, sir.
I'm just listening, man.
You're so well, man. So well spoken, man. That's so well said. Thank you, man.
I appreciate it, man.
That.
Of course, man. Yeah, yeah. You've got a gift. And, you know, I think the first thing I saw of yours was the cover you did with Shania Twain, right?
Ah, she's, wow, what an angel.
And the first thing I ever heard out of your mouth, when someone sent this to me, do you remember what you say at the beginning of that song?
Yeah, it's my mama, my beautiful mother, man.
That's what you say the first thing.
Yeah, she's an angel. I love her.
You say you dedicate this to my mom.
Yeah, she's the best.
And you say this, you know, you're still the one I love, you know, all that stuff. So why did you decide to do that cover? I think it did over 120 million views. Why did you decide to do that? And why did you decide to dedicate it to your mom?
Well, you know, that song, I mean, I always, that whole album, God, dude, that she's just incredible. That song just reminded me of my mother. I don't know why. I don't remember what album where I was like, we should do this cover. And, you know, but I think I heard it or something. And I was like, man, this makes me think of my mama, and maybe we should do this next. It's something like, I can't remember the place where we decided, but I remember when we were recording it, I was just like, man, I'm going to dedicate this to my mama because it just makes me think of her. And it's just such a beautiful song. And it makes me think of us in the car and that song being on the radio and, you know, us going down the road and, you know, me singing in the car and my mom's, and just makes me think of home, you know? And
wow.
And it's been such a beautiful thing too, because not only has that changed my life so much, but we still play it every night. And, you know, and a lot of people have gotten like married to my version of that song and stuff too, which is so powerful.
You play it on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll always play that live, man.
We'll always play that one too, as far, because it's such a
contrast, like seeing you with like the physical body you have and the beard and, you know,
yeah,
the tattoos.
I think that's a lot of
this sweet, beautiful like song.
I think a lot of that has been like what happened in my career too, is because of like, you know, the way I look versus the way I sound. I think it's been a gimmick that we've really been able to work.
Yeah.
But it's so fun. We go out there and every day I'm like, yo, is anybody, you know, here with the mother this evening? Or is anybody else just a mom at all? And I, you know, for the rest of us, can we make noise for the most beautiful creatures in the world, you know?
Wow.
And you just honor mom for a minute. Every day is Mother's Day for me, man.
Wow,
you know?
Beautiful.
And so I'm just like,
it's fun to go on stage and always just shout out to moms, and they're just like, you see somebody with their kid, or you see somebody with their daughter, and then their daughter's daughter, you know, and you see this generations of people in the crowd, and all shapes and sizes and colors, all just holding each other together. And this couple who got married to it, they're just slow dancing in the middle of the crowd. And you're just like, God, it's just a way to bring people together. And I mean, that song, you know, that song just...
What's a line in that song or a phrase in that song that resonates with you the most?
You know, just look at us still holding on, you know, we're still together. And it's like that pre, and you're still the one I run to. You're the one I belong to, you know, you're still the one I want for life. You know, you're just like, that whole song, I think is like, it's a love song, you know, and it's definitely about like a relationship with a person that has been, I guess, you know, together for a long time. But to me, it's always reminding me of my mom. And when we really spin the lyrics, you know, there are kind of, it can also be that way. You know, you're still, we've made it through everything together, mom. And we're like, well, I love you. And you're still the girl I run to, you know, my mom's is still my everything. And she's my rock, dog. And
have you always had a good relationship with her growing up, or did you go through some challenges?
We went through a lot of challenges, man. We did, but, she's always been, you know, and we've grown too. She one time told me the most beautiful advice, man. I guess not advice, but just something that she said to me the other day. She said, she was like, you know, I was cutting somebody's hair, and I had pictures of you and Kaylin, my older brother on the lawn. She said, Glenna, how'd you raise such good boys? And she said, hell, they raised me, you know.
Wow.
And it just touched my heart, you know, because my mom is just, I realized like, she was 23 or 25 when she had two kids. My dad was 21, I think, when he had two kids.
Wow.
Or 23 or something. It was like, they're a couple years apart. And if I'd have been like, not even 25 with two kids, holy dude, or 23 with two kids, I'm a child. I'm still not a child, you know, as far as I'm like, I see also too, that all the times and all the things that like, as I was growing up that my mom was doing, as I'm getting older, I'm starting to see like, oh, she was like a kid though still, you know, she was still growing and as a baby raising a baby, you know, and like any mistakes that were made were just like, that's a baby raising a baby. God bless her. You know, she was going through hell,
yeah.
Trying to figure out who she was, trying to raise two boys, trying to maybe still also have a child, like have some youth in her too. And so like, and it's tough to navigate being a new parent at all, but let alone that age, I'm sure. And so we had our times, you know, and we had our stuff, but and who doesn't, you know? And I think I'm just so grateful that she's really turned into this most beautiful woman and
wow,
flourished in that. And also watch as my mother watched me grow up, to watch my mother grow up, it's been like, it's been a hell of a thing. We really grew up together, you know?
And that's beautiful.
She's just a flower, man. She's the best.
That's great, man. What's the lyrics or the, you know, the phrase in a song that you feel like you've sung the most to yourself throughout your entire life? Maybe your childhood or your adult life. What's the thing that you see yourself just singing in the shower the most, or when you're in the car, or just humming? What are those lyrics of that verse that you sing a lot? Maybe it's your own song, maybe it's another song.
I would say but my favorite, I think probably the song I've sang the most in my life is Knocks Me Off My Feet, Stevie Wonder. I just love like that album, Songs in the Key of Life, is the best album ever. But I don't want to bore you with my troubles, something about your love. You know that song? I don't want to bore you with it. I love you, I love you, I love you. It's just such an infectious, beautiful song, man. And that album in general has just really always been something that's just so, so beautiful and powerful. It makes me just think of my childhood and just like growing up. And and if I was to say my own song, first song in my album is called Some Things I'll Never Know. And I find myself always singing that, you know, when did your heart let me go? I guess some things I'll never know. And it's a song that's really like helped me with a lot and an acceptance of things, you know, because,
how's that verse go?
It says, what did your heart let me go? I guess some things I'll never know is how the chorus of it.
When did your heart let me go?
Yeah. I guess some things I'll never know. And, if you haven't listened to the song, you should. It's such a beautiful song, man. And, it's like,
when it was written, it, you know, it kind of was like about just acceptance of, well, like people walk out of your life, you know, and I say this all the time on stage. When people walk out of your life, it could be a friend, it could be a significant other, or it could be just a death and something, you know, but there's no closure, I find, that when people leave your life, you know, and all you can do is hope that the best thing, they're doing the best for themselves. And if you really love them, you got to just let it go, and you don't get closure. They're not going to tell you, this is what you did wrong, this is why I'm leaving, or this is why I'm leaving, and, you know, it has nothing to do. They're not going to give you closure. You know, sometimes people just leave, and sometimes people don't say, they just go, and you got to hope that, or find some way to give yourself clarity or some sort of acceptance or internal closure that you'd be like, well, I guess this is the end of that, and there's no... And I always found myself with relationships that ended, like, looking for closure, like, why did this happen? I don't understand. Or, and it's just the acceptance of the things that I can't control. And that whole song's just kind of about, there's things I just can't control. And I just got to accept that I can't keep you here. I can't. And I found that there's two reasons. I think anyway, there's two reasons why people hurt you. And they either do it to specifically hurt you, or they do it to help themselves. And you just got to hope that they're doing it for their better good. And
interesting.
And if that's what they're doing it, if it ever takes you hurting me to make yourself better, then by all means, I would take that anytime. And I'll be glad to, well, not glad to, but I can accept that, you know, but
yeah.
It's always, I think with me, when you're just like trying to blatantly hurt somebody, I think that's when it's like, okay, you know, that you're giving me too much power. You're giving somebody else too much power. And if it's, they want to hurt you. So I just hope that it's always to benefit whatever you got to do for yourself. You're number one. You take care of that. You know.
This is a beautiful conversation, man.
I've got
a few more questions for you, if that's cool. But this has been really inspiring so far. It's a question that just came to me as you were saying this. You know, I think you're close to, or maybe you're over 1 billion streams already on your music in the last year. You know, platinum, you're selling out arenas around the world. Like, so much is happening for you right now. I'm curious, if you could go a year in the future and you could think back about the gift you would like to receive, the internal gift you'd like to receive from where you are now to everything you're about to experience and go through over the next year, what is that gift you would love to receive for yourself?
That's a really beautiful question. I think I would like to, if I could look back like a year from now and look back, I think I would like to just like, hopefully have and I'll say this as a gift, because I think I'd like to just learn to let things go better, you know, just learn to let things slide off, because everything I feel like sometimes to me is so huge, and every moment's so gigantic, and everything is so like, you know, massive, and whatever's happening right now. And there's a thing about being present, but there's a thing about being like, everything is not the end of the world. You know what I mean? Yeah. And if I could, I'm sure I'm just gonna, and I'm learning every day, but even if I could look back last year, I'm like, all the shit that I was making such a big deal was not that big of a deal, you know? And hopefully I will have the gift of discernment. You know, that would be good. Discernment will be the gift that I would like, much better discernment. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah.
I know a great tool that'll help, therapy.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
therapy has given me that. That's for sure. But all in time when you're ready, no pressure. You've got your tour coming out. People can go to teddyswims.com to learn more about everything you're up to. But you've got, you're on social media, Instagram. I love your Instagram content. Obviously, Spotify, YouTube, all these different places. They can see all your videos and everything. What can we do? Where should we follow you the most to see what you're up to, how we can support you, how we can serve you, watch you live? Where should we go?
All those are great places. But personally, yeah, I'm on Instagram the most. I've way too much screen time, probably, man. I really just yesterday we went and got a new phone, like, so I can have my old phone, but I just that way, if I can have one that's just for, you know, the family, and also doesn't have any social media on it, so if I just want to leave this one for a day, I can just,
that's good,
go try to separate from it. But I'm always on there. If you want to hear anything that I'm doing, I'm probably posting a stupid story, a meme, anything. Something about great, farts, and, no matter what.
That's great, man. But you're gonna be on tour for a while, right?
Yeah, we'll be we got Europe coming up, and then, you know, Australia, New Zealand, and then
back in
September,
US.
October, we're in the States, and it's amazing, go, man.
So yeah. if check out the tour dates, if it's not sold out, and get a ticket, scalp it if you have to, but make sure you see Teddy live anywhere around the world. And if you get a chance, you know, go, because you guys do like a VIP thing. People can get upgraded, yeah, to like, yeah, see him before or after.
Yeah, we do like a 100-person meet and greet most of the time.
That's before, great.
And it's the best, dude. It's the best.
Before the event, right?
Yeah,
before the show?
And it gives me all the energy I
That's
need
great,
before
man.
The show, too. You know, it's I find it's like quite a strange thing, though, because it's such an up and down of emotion. Like somebody's like so excited, you're smiling for the next person you got 20 seconds with, and they're like sobbing, and then you're like, oh, and then you're like, it's just second loads of just up and down, you know? And so after, I'm just, oh yeah.
I you're ready it. To go.
But I love it, man.
That's
man. I love just the connection when
That's beautiful. Man. Well, if anyone watching or listening goes and sees you at a VIP, make sure to give Teddy a big hug.
Absolutely.
And let him know that you know, what part of this show you enjoyed the most, and the conversation that we had, what you enjoyed the most. This is a question I ask everyone at the end of our interviews, and it's a hypothetical question. It's called the three truths.
Okay.
So I'd like you to imagine a world where you get to live as long as you want, you know, another 100 years if you want to, but eventually it's the last day on earth for you. And you get to create everything you want to create. You get to have the relationships you want, the career you want, you get to put the music out, everything you get to do, you dream of, it happens, you manifest it. But on the last day of Earth, you have to take all of your creations with you. This conversation's gone, your music's gone, hypothetically, right? And for whatever reason, this happens. But on the last day, you get to leave behind three final lessons, three final truths from your life experience.
Okay.
They can be verses from a line of music. They could be what's on your heart or mind right now. They could be anything at all. If you could fast forward to the future that many years and think about what you'd want to share to leave behind, what would be those three lessons or three truths for you?
I would ultimately say the same thing, man. When you talk to somebody, you make sure that they feel like they're the most important thing in the world. And, you make sure that time you spend is time well spent. I think also your time is no more valuable than anybody else's, you know, again. And I guess, yeah, in the sake of time, you know, like, I guess that's all, because when you ask that question, it does really make you think about the time that you have, or the time that you could have, or what you're leaving behind. And I sometimes wonder if, before I get to the turn, I also sometimes wonder if, like, am I doing this to be remembered? Because like, eventually oblivion is inevitable, right? So like, even when I am gone, at some point I'll be forgotten. So am I doing this to like make little exchanges here and there, or just to make the most out of my life, to have a blast? Or am I doing this to be remembered? Because I always say, certainly if I am doing this business to be remembered, I'm in the wrong business, because Hitler will be remembered way after I will, way long, you know. Serial killers will be remembered way after we will. So I think if you really wanted to be remembered, you'd probably just be a serial killer or something,
right,
you know,
right,
what
right.
I mean? So clearly I'm not doing it for that reason. So it's always tyrants and serial killers that are just remembered forever for some reason. I think it's like the worse you do on the world, the more you're remembered. So, which is kind of weird in a way.
Sad. Yeah.
But so I don't think I'm doing it for that reason, clearly. But so I don't know. Like, I never really think about what I'm leaving behind, you know? But
what would be the lesson, the final lesson you think that you'd want people to
just
think about their lives?
I think there are some universal truths, you know, and there are a lot of things that aren't black and white, but there are things that are black and white. And I think it's just, you know, just love, you know, love yourself, love people, man, love people, just love people. I think there's, I believe in the inherent goodness of people, and I think everybody is. And I think there's just, I think bad things happen and bad decisions are made. And I think people just have a reason for what you're doing, you know, and I just love people.
Bye. That's beautiful, man. Jaden, I've got one more question for you. Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you, man, because I love how real and authentic you are. I love
I
love your heart. I love your honesty. I love your authenticity. And I love that you have been committed to your dream and your voice for the last decade plus, and you've gone all in on it. Most people give up a year or two into their dream, and you've been 10 plus years into it, and you're just getting started now. And so the fact that you've been consistent, committed, you know, you've been bringing your friends along the way with you, giving people opportunities. And it sounds to me like you've been yourself throughout the whole journey. I think it's just a beautiful thing. So I want to acknowledge you, man, for everything you're up to and for being of service to people using your voice and your talent, your gift, whether they listen, they stream something, whether they watch this or they go watch you live. It's a beautiful thing to see, man. And I acknowledge you for, you know, doing everything but therapy and working on yourself, because I think a lot of people get comfortable with where they are. They stay familiar, even if it's toxic or it's hurtful. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you said, you know what, you know, Dallas Diamond Page, yeah, I'll come and I'll do some yoga and I'll start doing some things over here and I'll try to work on myself. The fact that you're doing that and not staying stuck in this, well, I'm this struggling artist that has to be depressed in order to make great art. That's a beautiful lesson that I want people to take away from this as well. That you can be loving, you can be joyful, you can be growing personally in whatever ways works for you and make a difference in the world. So I acknowledge you, man. And I'm excited to watch your journey soar. It's a beautiful thing. One final question.
Okay.
What is your definition of greatness?
That's such a crazy line. I think feeling happiness, you know. I feel like greatness is I don't want to say what is the difference between satisfaction and contentment, you know? Because I don't know. Is there a difference in those words? Because I don't want to...
Some people are satisfied, but they're not content.
They can be satisfied. I feel like greatness will maybe be satisfied, but I also don't know if I'll ever do that. So it doesn't mean I'll never achieve greatness. I don't know. Maybe greatness is never being satisfied. There we go. That's what it means. Yeah, never being satisfied is, I think, my definition of greatness. Always striving for more and always... always growing. And yeah, that's a good one. Okay.
There you go. Jaden, Teddy Swims, my man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, bro. What a great talk.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode and it inspired you on your journey towards greatness. Make sure to check out the show notes in the description for a full rundown of today's episode with all the important links. And if you want weekly exclusive bonus episodes with me personally, as well as ad-free listening, then make sure to subscribe to our Greatness Plus channel exclusively on Apple Podcasts. Share this with a friend on social media and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Let me know what you enjoyed about this episode in that review. I really love hearing feedback from you, and it helps us figure out how we can support and serve you moving forward. And I want to remind you, if no one has told you lately, that you are loved, you are worthy, and you matter. And now it's time to go out there and do something great.